Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing The Great Season 2. Damask Leary, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good. I did some Christmas shopping today. It's getting fucking hot in WA. Oh my God. It's going to be 42 degrees on Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very, very hot here. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I shall survive.
Stay inside, or if not inside, covered in water in a pool or a beach. And that are your only two options, really.
Yeah.
Anything else is just suicide.
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm very close to a beach. So I was at the beach yesterday and I'll be fine, guys. Don't stress. Don't stress. How are you, Brad?
I am a little tired. My last day of work for the year, which feels fantastic. But It's like as you get close to that finish line, your brain just starts to shut off before you're actually allowed to shut off. I'm in that just like fugue state at the moment. I actually just did a COVID rapid antigen test. I'm like, I just feel like shit. Maybe I have COVID. So I just did one just to check. And I'll do another one actually before I head to my parents' place for Christmas. Because That's what you got to do when you live in Melbourne at the moment. COVID everywhere. Not as bad as Sydney, but pretty much everywhere. A couple of things I did want to bring up before we get to our spoiler-free review as well. We are on Spotify, but most importantly on Spotify now, you can rate and review us on Spotify. I don't know if you can leave words or comments or anything, but you can give us a star rating, which is super helpful. So even if you don't listen to us on Spotify, and some of you probably do, but if you don't listen to us on Spotify, but you have Spotify, look for Hunting Seasons, find us, do us a massive solid and give us 5 stars on that. Because if we can, you know, get our ratings up and profile up on Spotify, we might be able to find some new listeners, which would be wonderful. That'd be really helpful. Secondly, I did want to bring up, I don't know anymore whether we're going to do a Hawkeye review. If we do, I think it might just be in a what we've been watching discussion, a future off-topic, hot topic. Because I think this might be our last review for the year.
Yeah.
Is how I'm feeling.
I think we're done.
I'm not quite done with Hawkeye. I've got to watch the finale. But at this stage, I don't feel like I've got a whole lot to say about it other than I've mostly enjoyed it. And you haven't started it yet, have you?
No, I haven't started it yet.
So I want to put it out there. If listeners are really, really keen for us to review Hawkeye, maybe we'll find a way to at least do a mini review or something like that. But if we don't hear from yous, we're going to assume you don't care. So let us know. DM us, Instagram, Twitter, email us. Let us know. In the meantime, let's get to our spoiler-free review of The Great Season 2.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
4 months after initiating a coup for the throne of Russia, Catherine is on the cusp of victory. But is she really capable of taking the crown from her husband, Peter? And even if she does, will she be the leader Russia needs? The Great returns with almost all of its season one cast, with the notable addition of TV's second busiest woman, after Haley Steinfeld, Gillian Anderson. Season two consists of 10 episodes, each coming in at around 55 minutes, and took us approximately 9 hours and 5 minutes to watch. At the time of this review, there has been no word on if The Great will return for a third season. Damask, before we get to our spoiler-free review, can you please remind the listeners what you thought of season one, which came out, would you believe, about 2 years ago, by the way?
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I very much enjoyed it. It was a nice surprise, I think. I'd heard about it. I'd heard that it was coming, but I didn't have high expectations. I did know it was by the guy who did The Favourite, and I really enjoyed that. I think that kind of made me put my eyes on it. Just that simple fact. So I popped it on, and then as I was watching, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, this has The Favourite all over it, and I really enjoyed that film. I found it very, very funny. It was dark and gross and wonderful. I was very impressed with season one. I told everyone to watch it as quickly as I could. Yeah, no, big fan.
You gave it a 4.5, though you were tossing up possibly giving it a 5. I believe I also gave it a 4.5, and it was in a similar boat. Really, really, really enjoyed The Great. We had very few negative things to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only really major downside for us was that it sort of dragged a little bit towards the middle, maybe back just before getting into sort of the third act.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, we were really taken with it. Loved the writing, loved the comedy, loved the performances in particular. Nicholas Hoult was a real standout. And Phoebe Fox as well, who was sort of new for us. Massive, massive fan. So we were looking forward to The Great Season 2 in a big, big way. And it was good news when it was announced it was getting a second season. We didn't really know that was going to be the case. I'm not sure we knew if it was... I knew it was a critical hit, but I'm not sure if it was a commercial hit necessarily. So very happy to see we're getting a second season. Now it's here and we've watched it. Damask, could you please give us your spoiler-free review of The Great Season 2?
I reckon I could. Okay, so obviously, as you just heard, I loved season one, and I was so happy to have The Great back finally. Now I'm hearing after almost 2 years, which is shocking and depressing and all that wonderful stuff.
Pre-COVID.
Was it?
I believe so. I'm going to double-check the dates, but I believe that's right. Yeah, okay. In the before times.
Yeah. All right, so... what did I like this time around? So I still had plenty of chuckles. You know, I do love the grotesque world that we dive in with this show. It feels heady and sick, and in the way that I think an exploration of aristocracy should. And Nicholas Hoult continues to give his all and make a monster a character you can sympathize with. And Elle Fanning ricochets between fiery determination and wide-eyed fear and naivete. I think both those performances still really hold this show up, and I enjoyed them very much. And I think the performances all around are excellent. But I do have to talk about what I didn't like this time around. So I think there's no denying, really, that it felt as though there was simply less to do this season. In season one, we had a ramp up of when will Catherine and Peter truly go head to head? The show was filled with moments of great tension between the two, and, you know, I was yearning for a satisfactory climax, and I got it. You know, we had a wonderful moment of fuck yeah and oh my God, what's next? You know, we had many background machinations, they were afoot, and everyone in the show had their part to play. Every episode, I was wondering whether someone would get away with something. No matter what that thing was, I was like, oh my God, am I nervous? Am I happy? Like, there was a lot of emotions going on that kept me wanting to watch the next episode. And unfortunately, that wasn't really the case this time around. The season is quite a different beast. We do still have the dynamic between Peter and Catherine, and that, for me, does continue to be an intriguing one. But sadly, a lot of our other characters are left with underwhelming storylines. You know, we have our revolutionary BFFs of Velimentov and Orlo, and they're somewhat sidelined as, you know, Catherine tries to figure out who she wants to be in the new world. Poor old Mariel is given just as little, not even less. She's put in a rather uninspired and uninteresting love affair that should be complicated, but for me, ultimately falls flat. You know, I really missed the stakes. I didn't have them this time. You know, previously Catherine was in such a dire situation. I was at the edge of my seat, but this year I was firmly planted. And I think a big part of that is that while I love the character of Peter, he was, while very funny and flirtatious and charismatic, was very scary last season for a lot of it. And I think we lost that this year. You know, I saw certain possibilities when faced with new challenges by certain characters. Archie, for example, you know, when we begin, he's in a very tenuous place. You know, how would this staunch patriarch find new faith and purpose? Where is he going to plant his feet? But almost half of his time on screen was spent on a character trait that got in the way, I think, of a more interesting character study and possible relationship developments, particularly with Catherine and other people in the court. Now, this season wasn't bad. That's not what I'm saying. But my expectations were so high. I expected season two to be just as tightly woven together as the first. And for me, it really wasn't. I'll certainly be back for season three, but I don't think I'll be begging everyone to watch season two like I did the first. And that's my review.
Interesting. First thing I want to correct, it wasn't in the before four times. It was in the just started times of May 2020.
There you go.
So in the naive days, and we thought maybe this will just last 6 weeks, this COVID thing, which still feels like a very innocent time compared to where we are now. But to your review, I'm feeling a lot of relief because I agree with you in so many ways. And I was wondering, like, I wrote this review on my first lines, like, maybe I'm just tired after a very long 2 years, or maybe I've been spoiled by the phenomenal Succession season three, which we only reviewed last week. But for some reason, I wasn't quite as charmed by the great season two compared to season one. I think almost everything you've said is pretty much on par with what I think as well. Because I don't want you to get me wrong here. Just like you said, it's still a very good show in a lot of ways. It's very fun. It's very silly. It's very entertaining a lot of the time. But season twos or second seasons are hard. And the pressure is on that season to prove that it wasn't just a one season wonder. This show can go on and build to be something bigger still. In a general sense, I just don't think season two was able to beat or even quite match the wonderful surprise that was season one. One of my only criticisms, or the only criticism that we really had of season one, was that it dragged a little bit in the middle sections of the season. In general, I just found the length of the episodes in season two to be a bit excessive. I don't know if there was a lot as much there to fill those 55-minute episodes on average. There is plenty of drama, obviously. These are dramatic circumstances, violent circumstances at times. But this is ultimately a very silly show, and 10 almost hour-long episodes mean that silliness can start to have diminishing returns, I think. This season also lacks the natural momentum of the first, which is what you were saying. Not surprising if you think about it. How can you compare planning and executing a coup to just trying to run a country? Once again, I found myself just a little bit less enraptured than I was in season one. Probably my biggest complaint this time around, though, is the general underutilization of some of my favorite characters from season one. Season two feels very, very, very focused on Elle Fanning's Catherine and Nicholas Holt's Peter. And fair enough, they are just as fantastic as they were in season one. But I couldn't help but wish more was done with Sacha Dhawan's Orlo and Phoebe Fox's Mariel. Both these characters served as fantastic sounding boards for Catherine season one. So many scenes of Catherine talking to Orlo, or Catherine Mariel, who was her like chambermaid for most of that season. And it felt like those characters were sidelined and just not as well utilized this time around. I know Mariel's circumstances are different in this season, but I kind of wish they found an excuse to make her a chambermaid or something again, because that dynamic was just so potent that once that reason for her being there all the time wasn't there, it's like I'm missing some of my favorite stuff from the first season.
Yeah, they cut the legs off a lot of their characters.
I think so.
And I think that, like, you know, that cutting off of the legs really worked for season one. But towards the end when all those things kind of come to a head. But then we're left in season two kind of going, well, what do these people have to do now that's interesting for me?
Absolutely. On a positive note, though, when Gillian Anderson enters the story as Catherine's mother Joanna, the season really started to sing for me. She added a great new wrinkle to the show's character dynamics, challenging our core players in new ways, and my only complaint was that she didn't arrive in the story earlier. If you simply want more of the great, season two definitely provides that in a lot of ways, and maybe that's enough to satisfy, but I can't pretend I'm not a little let down overall. Would I watch a third season of The Great? Most definitely. But I'm not going to be waiting with bated breath quite like I was after season one. So I feel like you and I have probably ended up in very similar places overall with this season.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Which is interesting. And I do think also sometimes you can just get a feel for what like the discussion is online. And I'm not hearing a lot about The Great. I think maybe a couple of listeners have said they really enjoyed season two and were waiting for our review. But like, everyone's talking about Succession online. Have been all season, and particularly by the time the finale was out. Can't escape Spider-Man and Matrix talk at the moment, stuff like that. But it's funny, I felt like the great sort of lit a fire at the time season one came out. I'm just not feeling that much at the
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, I think like I have a bit of a different experience online because I don't see a lot of that chat, even about Succession, because pretty much all of my social media feeds are Real Housewives centered. So I'm sure. Always surprised like when you know, give me the insight of like what the temperature is about a show online. But yeah, that's not surprising. I think, yeah, I'm a little shocked at how similar our reviews are. Yeah.
I have a theory as to why, besides the obvious in terms of what the core driving narrative of season one is compared to season two, that why season two maybe doesn't work as well. The Great is an adaptation of a play. And I don't think season one is just a word-for-word replication of that play. But I do wonder whether a lot of that material from the play that was adapted was used in season one. And so season two is almost completely being written from whole cloth this time. And whether that means stuff that had not just been written a long time ago, but perfected over time because it was on stage and like, you know, it was would have gone through so many different versions until it ended up with the one that made it to stage. It meant that it was just a lot of there to begin with, and season two was having to make it up as it went along. And because of that, it might have just been starting with a disadvantage as well. Just a theory. I've got no way to back that up because I've never seen the play. I can't even find a script online to check. Nobody really talks about that play. But that's a really strong foundation to have, I think, when you make a season one. And season two doesn't have that.
I also think that, one of my favorite activities while watching season one of The Great was like something crazy would happen. Then I would Google it. And while a lot of like, you know, the intricacies or like certain things were not true and they simply weren't true from the beginning, a lot of the crazy stuff I would Google, I'd be like, oh my God, like something like that or very similar to that actually happened. And then we get to this season and like I do my Googling. I was like, oh, it's just like none of it is.
Basically none.
And so like perhaps, you know, to be as inventive as history and how fucked up that period of time was, it's really hard to kind of match. So I guess I had less inspiration from Catherine's life at that point.
I think you're right, very much right. The stakes in season one feel a lot higher than season two. And a lot of season one is spent just showing you how high the stakes are for Catherine, right? I also think, and I've said this before, sometimes when there's a lot of violence, it starts to just stop, eventually stops having an effect or it stops being effective because you get used to it. And I wonder whether that's partly what's happening here as well. The shock of how gross and violent and brutal this world is in season one stops being a shock by the time season two is around. So it's just not as titillating anymore and therefore not as exciting and, yeah, like just fun to be in. Just a thought.
Yeah. We do also see Catherine break down in a very similar way several times in this season. And I think every time they do it, it's less effective. And Elle Fanning's great at like doing the open mouth cry and like wail. Like she is fantastic at it. But it makes that character, she goes from high highs and then like the lowest of lows. And I'm really kind of missing that messy stuff in the middle.
I also wonder about things like how much COVID has affected things, which is worth considering because a criticism I had of season one was that the only other criticism I can remember having is that, and again, maybe it was thematically the kind of the point, but the Winter Palace does start to feel a bit samey when you're not going anywhere and you're just spending time either inside the meeting room or inside the breakfast room or inside Peter's room or inside Catherine's room and inside the hall that connects all that. And it just becomes not that it's not visually distinct. I guess it's not meant to be. But it stops being visually appealing and it's a lot of that again. And even the times where they maybe try to have more grandiose shots, I think because of COVID, are all green screened and look awful.
Yeah,
and like, it doesn't matter that much, those particular shots, but you start to wonder, like, what effect has COVID had on the ability for this show to be the best version of itself, I guess, right now. How would you score and rank this season of The Great?
Yeah, well, I think it's no surprise to anyone listening that it's obviously not going to be number one this season. Season one still has that place firmly. It's still a good show, though. So I'm going to give it like a solid 3.5.
Yeah, I'm thinking a 3.5 as well. A high 3.5.
Yeah.
Tempted to a low 4, but I think 3.5 is the right place for it. There are seasons of BoJack Horseman that are 3.5s that I love that show overall. I just think this is definitely a step down. It's not quite excellent enough to be a straight up excellent 4, I don't think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, guys, before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify now. Mm-hmm. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way.
And to sweeten the deal, if we were to reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
Ooh. We would also love you to share Hunting Seasons with friends and family who you think might also enjoy listening.
Next week, or sometime in the nearish future, maybe is a better way of putting this, we'll be back with a special end-of-year off-topic, hot-topic bonus episode. Might be before the end of the year. It might be early January. If you would like to contribute a question, topic, or story to Off Topic, Hot Topic, or if you have any thoughts on The Great or on the year of TV as it was, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter @HuntingSCast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for The Great Season 2.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning. From here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in season 1 and 2 of The Great. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of The Great up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead. You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
Is there any particular storyline or part of the show you would like to start talking about first? Damask, the ball is in your court. It's all on you. Go.
Oh, golly. Okay. So I will say that one thing that I really enjoyed is the involvement of the character Elizabeth. So Peter's dear aunt. I always really enjoy when that character is on screen. I think they maintain her complexity as well as her reasons behind doing certain things. Yeah, I thought that was really well done throughout the season, because I've got complaints about other characters, but I just really wanted to start off on that one.
I agree with you. She was one of the better used characters. They kept... Well, what the thing was, Elizabeth has direct connections and influence on Peter and on Catherine. And so since it was a season that was so focused on that relationship between those two people, Elizabeth is the obvious character who gets to benefit from the screen time from that. And they do great things with that. It's interesting, too, to remember at the end of season one, they sort of set up this idea that Archie was suggesting that maybe she could be an alternative to Catherine. And I guess in the 4 months that the coup took place in, that kind of just fell away and didn't really happen. I was expecting maybe we're going to come back to a sense that, because I was wondering, I was kept thinking as like, oh, she's I know she's kind of playing the situation to her advantage and protecting Peter and stuff, but are we going to find out that she is making a play for the throne here? And I don't think she was.
No.
She realistically, she's sort of just wants to look after Peter because she loves Peter and she believes in the ideals of Catherine, but also Catherine's a dum-dum and doesn't know what she's doing. And so she's trying to help her as best she can in her own Elizabeth way. And yeah, I really like that character a lot. I think it's a great performance. She's really well written. She's complex and has a really interesting sort of backstory and emotional through line in terms of like, her connection to Peter, her connection to Peter's mum, her connection to her own kids, and the situation that happened there. She is a fantastic character, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, she was certainly a highlight for me and created, I felt a feeling of genuine like connection there, just like me as a viewer that I didn't have the opportunity to feel. And I think, you know, when we're talking about Mariel and the storyline there with her and Grigor, I just like, I personally couldn't have cared less, I don't think. Like, well, I mean, what was your take on it? Because every time it was happening, I was like, I get that we need Mariel to be doing something because she has less impact in Catherine's life now. Though I don't think that should have been the case. To just shove her with Grigor, great conceptually in terms of like, these are the two best friends. They have ulterior motives and a whole lot of stuff could have been happening behind the scenes. But nothing really was all that much.
Yeah, I think that's true of like how I feel about Orlo's storyline a lot of ways as well. We'll come back to him in a second. So it's interesting. It feels like pre-COVID since we watched The Great. Not quite true, apparently, but I was listening back to our review to try and just get like a bit of a remembering of what happened that season and what was exciting us about it, because I definitely knew I was hotter on season one than season two. And one of the things we absolutely raved about was we loved the complex trio of the relationship of Grigor, George, and Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And so quickly in this season, George just disappears off to France.
Yeah.
Grigor remains so they can do this thing with Mariel and Grigor. And it just does not compare to what was a very, very interesting dynamic of friends and lovers of those three. And one of the things you said in that review, because at the end of that season, Grigor finally gets up the courage to say, I wish you didn't fuck George, basically. And Peter goes, oh, so you do care. I guess I won't then, or maybe twice a year, which is like, ha, 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 that's the joke that's Peter of it all. And they even mentioned that in like episode one or two that they had that conversation. But you were like, I'm fascinated to see what that looks like next season. If Peter like does stand by, and that just isn't a thing this season. No. It just doesn't. It's not an element that the show cares about at all. And I think that's a little bit sad. Maybe they just felt they were done with that, but that was truly compelling, and I don't think what replaced it. George leaving, Grigor and Mariel together, and then sort of wishing that Peter would want to take the throne back, but Peter sort of not really actually wanting to, wasn't actually a compelling storyline or element. It wasn't fun or complex or exciting in any way that really interested me. Honestly, Mariel becoming a noble again or aristocrat again was possibly the worst thing for that character. I know they did the thing about how she has empathy for Shaky and the other serfs now, but I didn't really play into the overall story or the complexities of the situation all that much. It was just sort of like, I guess Mariel cares about people a bit more than she used to.
Yeah. That's things like,
on we go.
I feel like things were happening, sure, but like it really lacked in through lines. Like, I thought that moment of Mariel being like, I wish I hadn't seen the other side, because now I do feel things that it's much easier not to feel. That's really compelling. That's really interesting. And she was going to continue to move through life feeling those things. But we get one episode of that, and her character in mostly every other way has not changed at all by that situation. She's just gone from handmaiden Mariel into aristocratic Mariel, and it's the same person, but with less interaction with Catherine now.
Less interaction with Catherine, I genuinely just think just not as well written. I couldn't get over, I remember it, and then listening back to our review, I fucking fell in love with Phoebe Fox because of that performance, but also Mario was just so well written, and that repartee, if that's the right expression, of Catherine and Mario, like Catherine the optimist and Mario the like pessimist realist, you know, who comes in and tells her to get a bucket before she slashes her wrist, you know, all those sorts of biting, sarcastic, witty lines, just, I don't know, maybe, okay, that's why I said I worried that maybe I'm tired and over this year and wasn't connecting with it because of something that was happening with me. So it gives me a lot of relief that you felt the same way. I just, for some reason, it wasn't there this season in Mariel. And then, if you don't mind me moving over to Orlo for a second, I feel like Orlo's in a very similar place where he and Catherine did challenge each other already. And obviously there was challenges here because Catherine doesn't want to fucking listen to him. But when he's not in the room with her, he's fucking the teacher. And that was some revelation, but I was like, it really wasn't. Like, it wasn't all that compelling. It felt...
Well, it wasn't anything.
It's so undercooked as to be almost irrelevant to the story.
It's 100% irrelevant.
What I wish kind of happened, I know Archie, they did some things with Archie this season to a degree. There was such a fantastic tension between Orlo and Archie in season one. I kind of would have liked to have seen a situation where maybe they even had to work together because they both realized that Catherine has potential to be doing stuff here, but she was fucking it up. Like, more between, what's the name of the general? I've forgotten.
Velimentov
and Orlo and Archie. I think realistically, Archie can be a part of that too. And have them have to, like, even as much as they hate each other, especially Orlo and Archie, have them have to, like, make the Catherine thing work if they can. Or look at alternatives. Look to Elizabeth. Look and go, maybe we need to cut our losses here. We had the coup, but maybe Catherine's not the one and we do need to look to Elizabeth. Or something like that. Because it just most of the time seemed like people just kept putting up with her
well,
shit.
Well, that's exactly what I was about to say, was that, like, yeah, you know, we have Orlo, who's like desperately trying to like do things the way that he believes that they can be done. But it was the same scene over and over again where Orlo gives her advice and she just like shrugs him off. And then he's like annoyed about it and slowly just like becomes disillusioned. But like
that's
it
the
was
problem,
the
right?
same scene.
It didn't ever like feel like it was building towards a change in Orlo or a change in that relationship. He'd have a sulk about it. And then, as you said, the same scene would happen over and over and over again every time that we came across that situation.
Yeah, it would have meant so much more in that, obviously, when Catherine finds out that he's stolen money to give to his uncle. And if that scene had been actually about her finding out that Orlo, Archie and Velimentov had been not necessarily conspiring against her, but conspiring in parallel to get things done in a different way because they didn't believe the way that she was going about things.
Beautiful
that would be way more interesting than just like, oh yeah, I gave my, where I'm from, a bunch of money.
I hated that scene. I thought it was so poorly executed because yes, we had those two or three scenes where this guy that Orlo knows comes in and makes him do something and he gets some money, and then we find out from two characters that I don't remember were the guys in charge of the money. I don't remember their scenes. If they were there, they weren't memorable. And like, oh yeah, there's been a discrepancy in the books. It was Orlo. I'm furious with you now, Orlo. Oh, don't be furious with Orlo. He just, you know, he was doing the best he could. It was so undercooked.
Yeah.
It just, the scale, the narrative balance is so weighted on the Catherine and Peter love, quote unquote, love story that everything else felt not just secondary, but tertiary. With Elizabeth being maybe the only character who felt like that she was competing at all for that real estate in the narrative, I thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, because, yeah, there is so much there in terms of Orlo is from a part of Russia that has been forgotten and never gets any kind of benefit of really being a part of Russia. And then we also have Mariel, who's experienced the other side of aristocracy, all those things coming together, and Catherine perhaps needing to isolate herself from those people because they don't actually have to make the decisions. They can be, you know, bleeding hearts and all this thing, but the complexity around that is really interesting and something she's going to have to personally battle with. We don't really get an in-depth discussion or look at any of that kind of stuff.
It's
frustrating because I see so much potential, and I really saw that particularly with Archie's character. He's like, you know, if we're just looking at the outline, someone who I quite enjoyed at the beginning. He's like, I am the patriarch, and if you get rid of the church, you're fucked. Like, you could be in so much danger.
He played it really well early in the season, too. He played his hand beautifully. The best bit being when, I think it's episode 3, where Catherine starts to sort of see some of the nobles come through, and there's this one fucking pig of a guy who's, like, urinating on the floor and stuff, and no one can control this guy, and certainly Catherine can't. And then Archie comes in and goes, fucking repent, heathen. And he pays attention. And it's like, Archie plays his hand beautifully then. He just proved his value at a time when Catherine was willing to get rid of him. And that was kind of it.
It's such a shame. And like,
of faith.
Yeah, because, you know, we have moments with Archie and Catherine. Catherine's very much like, no, fuck off, not interested. But obviously, yeah, he shows his value to her in trying to rule these people. Because Archie is such a devout person, watch that relationship grow to that his faith, while always being centered on God, then kind of transfers to her as God's chosen one. That could have been a really interesting development. We don't get any of that. Instead, we have Archie's sex addiction, which is such a waste of a character. In every scene, he's like doing this sex addiction thing. I was like, I mean, loss of faith is great and all that, but it just felt like a joke and with not a whole lot of insight behind it.
Yeah, I don't feel like they didn't get anywhere with it, at least not this season. And that was something I wondered. I was like, are they guaranteed a season 3? They already know they're getting one. Are they planning ahead for a third season where some of this stuff starts to pay off a bit better? Because I did feel like, the Archie storyline, the Orlo storyline, even the Mariel storyline with Grigor, and then I forgot his name again already. Velimentov. And it's a great name. I need to write it down. I used to know it, I swear. The Velimentov storyline that worked a bit better for me generally, in the sense that his revelations about sort of being a father figure to Peter that Peter doesn't remember, I actually kind of liked.
Me too.
In the episodes where it was focused on, and then the constant frustration that, like, he senses that this war is here and needs to be done with, and eventually she's like, all right, fine, let's do it, and then he can't actually he overestimated his abilities, of course he did. There was something there, and then her having to deal with the leader of the Ottomans and that moment was pretty great. Because he went from being a non-believer to a really true believer in Catherine at the end of season one. Watching his faith waver throughout the season was pretty realistic. It was a really good through line from, I still believe in you, I still believe in you, just listen to me, please. Okay, I think I actually have lost faith in you as a leader by the end of the season. That worked.
Yeah.
That felt.
Yeah, I would have loved even, like, you know, we get to this point of going to war and Catherine having faith in him and being like, yeah, and how much that would have meant to him. And then to actually see him not be able to make the gains that he believes that he would, and see from his perspective, him kind of faltering and, like, not knowing how to tell his, like, beloved kind of royal queen that he's failing her, and then for her to discover that, and how devastating that conversation would have been, where she's like, I don't actually think you can do this. And I think I made a mistake in, like, telling you could go to war. Yeah, it would have been just filled with way more interesting character moments. But we don't get enough time with Velimentov to see his side of it, what that devastation would have felt like, to realize that he really wants it, but he just doesn't have the ability to do it.
And that's the frustrating irony of the season, is that it feels like a lot of wasted potential, great characters who weren't given enough to do, or storylines that weren't developed far enough. And yet, the season felt long. Like, it felt long.
Yeah, it did.
10 almost hour-long episodes. I just don't think there was... It weirdly, what they put on the screen wasn't enough to fill that 10 hours in a compelling way. It's almost like they were on a mission. It's like, we have to get the viewers to a point where they truly believe that Catherine and Peter love each other and actually should maybe be together. At least in theory, this maybe is a dynamic that is worth happening. And they dedicated 90% of their energy towards them. Then like, oh shit, we got to do something with the other characters as well. Let's put Marion and Grigor together and what else?
Yeah, I think in season one, the Peter and Catherine dynamic was so amazing to watch, and it was scary, but you know, you could understand the charm and the allure, but there was a real sense of danger. Mm-hmm. We don't have that anymore. And now we really want, I'm talking like from the perspectives of the writer, you know, we really want the audience to be invested in the romantic side of this relationship in a genuine way, not in a way where it's like, oh, this is scary so I can see the allure, or, oh, you know, they're playing one another, but a real genuine way. We want investment in this romantic partnership. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think for a while I was like, okay, sure, this is where we're going. I think the show is poorer for it. I really do. I think turning Peter all the way to the other side, and yes, obviously he's fallible and makes mistakes, but making him entirely a helpless child, I really think I would rather a complicated sociopath than this helpless little boy who needs a mommy to teach him right and wrong.
Yeah, there was something you said in your spoiler-free review about how he didn't feel dangerous anymore, which I think is 100% spot on. And again, listening back to our season one review, that danger, he is a monster, and there are lots of compelling reasons for why he's a monster, and it's less that he's a sociopath and more maybe that he's sort of just ignorant. It's just what he's been brought up into. He's been told he's all-powerful, he's been ordained by God, and that what he does is, because he's ordained by God, is absolutely acceptable. He's just never grown out of being a guy that's a child that's allowed to play with his toys in whatever way they want, or smash them up if he wants to, and that's what he does. And yeah, is it poorer for it, putting them together? Maybe.
In the way that they have, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's in a lot of ways, I'm on board with the show doing what it's doing with Catherine and Peter, because it is very complex, but it almost feels like they had to, like, they felt like they had to convince us multiple times over that this was okay. That this is like, no, you're allowed to like Peter now. You're allowed to like Peter, even though he almost fucking drowned her in season one and burned down a school with children in it, I'm pretty sure, in season one and like all these sorts of things. He's changed now. I mean, that's the whole thing with Elizabeth, isn't it? What's the line that she says in the last episode? I've got it down here in my side notes. Excuse me for 2 seconds. That is where the human being lives, at the how and why, not the should. So like the whole thing was like, we are going to rehabilitate Peter enough that you can sort of invest in them being together romantically. And if when we say they love each other, they actually love each other, and you shouldn't vomit in your mouth immediately when that happens. And like, I guess they get there. I'm fine with where they're at the season. Yeah.
I wish there was still an element of, so when we're talking about our finale, right? So we're at this point where it's Peter v. Catherine, and what's going to happen. And at no point did I believe that Peter would ever harm her, or, because what they've told us every episode this season is that Peter is changing. He's determined to change. He genuinely loves her. And he will sacrifice things that he never would have previously because he does love her. So, like, even at, in that last episode, there was no tension. And obviously, we had the doppelganger mentioned every episode. So, I was like, well, she's going to go kill him.
Yeah, when you
and then
her,
obviously it's got to be the doppelganger, and then Peter will be alive. You know what? Like, I was missing that tension. And I think, like, even though you can, I think you can get me to be like, yeah, I totally get why these two people are together, while still making me really fear that at any point Peter could flip. And maybe that's part of the seduction. I don't know. But yeah, that it was missing a little spice or something. I don't know.
The thing that's kind of weird is we'd already been there once that season where he got into a fucking room and he was going to kill her and she was crying, so he didn't.
Yeah.
And like, well, you already told us he wasn't going to do this. You've already convinced. And you know what's not going to make it any easier? Now they've got fucking Paul. Like, it really, I just wasn't convinced that was going to happen at all. And I also didn't get a sense that it was like, is this a two-season show? Are they really going to? And also, I know the show is not like super close to history. It's gotten further and further away from it. I just don't see the show ending with Peter reclaiming the throne from Catherine, because she's fucking Catherine the Great and she had a very long reign. Like, that's the historical figure we're doing this from. Of course she's going to remain. She's not going to be killed at the end of season 2. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. They overcompensated, I think. They didn't trust that we were going to follow along with getting these two together, and they had to put so much effort into getting us there that it was at the expense of the show overall.
And maybe I'd find that relationship a nice kind of piece of comfort if then the other sides of the show with like would have all this political intrigue and danger on that side. If it was balanced in that way, I think I'd be like less critical of how they approach that Catherine and Peter relationship. But because we don't really have danger from any side, I was like, oh, okay.
I kind of wish, this is where I'm frustrated, because I wish I had more to say about any of it. I don't think it's all that complex, ultimately. It's like Catherine was still, she came into through season one naive, an absolute idealist without any of the skills. That's what Orlo was there for. She gets into power. She wants to change the world immediately. Everyone tells her she can't. She keeps trying. She can't. She gets frustrated. So she goes and gets cunnilingus from Peter, because she's got control there, because she knows she's got control there. And then that she realizes she actually kind of loves him and doesn't want him to die. And cool. Okay. Yeah. That's a season worth of story. I don't know. We've been doing the Buffy loves Angel who's a fucking vampire thing for 20 plus years now. We can be okay with our heroines having, and the spike of it all even in Buffy and stuff like that. We can, our heroines can have complex relationships with complex and frankly monstrous men. And it,
like that scene where Buffy breaks down to Tara. She feels like she's the only one she can tell about Spike. Great scene. Love it. Because I saw Buffy feel all the complexities of like, this is disgusting and I feel gross about this, but this is what's happening in my life. Oh, yeah, we don't get that here.
No. Yeah, it's for all the flowery language and really well-written dialogue and like, I'm surprised there wasn't, it just does feel a lot shallower somehow than the first season was.
I mean, I think it's a good indication that majority of this, you know, spoiler zone talk has just been me kind of writing my own fan fiction. Like, I'm not actually talking about like a scene that happened in the show. I'm like, oh, I wish they'd done this, or I saw potential here. And
I took very few notes.
I don't have any notes. I'm talking out my ass. I have no notes.
But like my notes, my questions for this section were, do we believe in the Peter and Catherine love story? I'm like, yeah, they put a lot of work into that, and it got me to a point where I believe there is something going, there is some connection there, whether it's love or not. It's interesting.
Yeah, I do believe in it. I wasn't rolling my eyes being like, this is bullshit. So I do believe in it, but I need more than just that relationship in this show.
Well, okay. What about the Gillian Anderson stuff? Her coming in as Catherine's mother. I liked her performance first and foremost, but I liked Catherine did seem to have a different, like she would revert to this daughtery role and it felt different. She this need to impress her, this doubt that came from her because of the way that Joanna would just continuously tell her about her faults and the way she was fucking things up. How do you feel about like the Joanna constantly trying to have sex with Peter bit, and then that ended up with him having sex with her, even though he tried his best not to, and then her dying by falling out a window? I know it's a silly show, but I thought that was
that was a step too far. And it just removes any of like the, as a viewer, the hatred or ugh-ness I would feel, or the level of that I would feel towards Peter for doing that. So we have Joanna just like sexually harassing him. He's not in a good place, and finally he relents. So he's not really to blame there. In fact, you know, as an audience, almost commendable for holding off for so long. And then he fucks her, and he doesn't actually kill her. She just happens to fall out a window, which is the complication. So that's
which also Elizabeth happens to be walking by at the time, which helps to like, it's starting to get very convenient.
Yeah, it's
and weird,
yeah, it
like,
stops being because of character choices and just circumstance. This new complication isn't based on because well of who Peter is. It's just, well, this happened to happen, and he, you know, is a poor little boy who can't, like, control himself sometimes, but has been trying really, really hard. It's not really his fault. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I thought it was really cheap.
Cheap is a good word for it. Convenient is a good word for it. Circumstance, that's what it was, right? It was like this other force came in. Made this thing happen.
Yeah. It was like a natural disaster. Like, there's no one to blame. You can understand the complicated emotions around it, but there's no one to be like, fuck you, Peter. Like, how dare you? Yeah.
Because if the show did it, make it that somehow, like, let's imagine for a second that Peter had sex with Joanna. They finished having sex. He realized that this got out. He was fucked.
Yeah.
Killed her to make sure that didn't happen, and then had to cover it up with Elizabeth.
Way more interesting.
Or she gets out, Elizabeth kills Joanna, and then, you know, convinces Peter they need to hide her or whatever. And because if they didn't, they were all fucked.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, all of a sudden there's character motivation here. Mm-hmm. And Joanna can still be, like, seen as being the real force here that forced this on Peter. But also she did it because she was, I think, doing it deliberately to cause Catherine to kill him and sever this tie that she had to this guy. She constantly told Catherine she needed to kill Peter and all her friends, and this is how she was going to make it happen. And Joanna was, you know, a bad person. And it would have been her own fault, in a sense.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about her motivation, not in terms of like she was doing it deliberately for another purpose, but yeah, it was either, yeah, so Catherine would kill her or to get him on side, because she doesn't really know this guy, but to be like, oh, no, if you do usurp.
Sure.
Is that the right word? Catherine. Then look, we can all still be friends and fuck each other.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty clear that she... Like Elizabeth said, because Elizabeth kept telling Peter, you cannot have sex with her. If you have sex with Joanna, Catherine will kill all of us. Joanna kept saying to Catherine, Catherine, you need to kill Peter your friends. That was her motivation. Maybe she just was attracted to Peter on some level or whatever as well, but I think that was her main goal.
I don't think she ever was like, oh, yeah, baby, Peter. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah.
She was far too calculating for that. And so she came in with a goal in mind, would have thought she'd achieved that goal, and then because they had to save their own skin, would have done something drastic, very much in Peter and Elizabeth's playbook to do that. We've seen Elizabeth kill fucking children before for this sort of thing. And that would have been complex, but you also kind of understand why they had to save their bacon. And like... much more compelling than she fell out of a fucking window. Elizabeth happened to be going past the time, and they buried her in that hole they've been digging all episode. Like, really convenient circumstance that didn't have the dramatic weight that actually making the choice would have had.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. And like, maybe, are we being too harsh? It is a bit of a cartoon, this show. Like, it's...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be this harsh if I didn't absolutely fucking love season one and know that they can create this cartoonish world with like that resonated with me emotionally and made me really kind of feel a lot for the characters within it. Yeah.
Speaking of things that I like, the Leo situation that starts this season that sends Catherine spiraling, I thought was really well handled because you had to feel that even 4 months later. there had to be consequences to Leo's death. And I thought they handled that really well. Early parts of the season, I was pretty in, actually, with this show. It just kind of felt they've got to the middle and, like, right when it could have gotten interesting because we look at them, like, the realities of her leading were surprisingly stale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, at the beginning, I was really excited. And, yeah, as you said, as we got to the middle of the season, I was kind of thinking, I'm not sure they know where they want to go. Yeah.
And that's always a question, too, with season twos. It's like season one, you never feel like they're guaranteed they're going to get a season two.
Yeah.
So they
you make a whole story.
Mm. You make a story that if you just get one season, you might say, I wish there was more because there was so much more to tell, but you feel like there was a certain satisfaction to where you got to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you make a season two and suddenly you're like, well, we might get more seasons. Let's make sure we keep this going for a long, long time. Mm. And so are you starting to play the long game, and maybe that was not the strength of this show? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, do we have to start at 4 months after? If you're unsure of, like, the story to tell directly then in that awkward stage, I don't know, let's jump 10 years. What's Catherine doing then? Like, yeah.
Mm. I'm not even unconvinced that 4 months couldn't have been its own excellent season.
I agree. I would have loved to watch the two sides exist in that palace.
Yeah.
And the politicking going on either side, plus the kind of, I think it could have been really interesting. I agree with you. I had that thought as well.
Play the coup inside the Winter Palace over 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, the tactics they use to finally, to try and win over each other.
And
using
all the different, like, parts of the palace that we haven't seen before, we could see. Like, every time they walk up that green screen grand staircase. Yeah. I just want to know what's on the left and the right. I want to know what the fucking palace looks like. I'm so desperate to get a tour.
I do think some of that can be seen a little bit easier in season one. I get the feeling they just couldn't get that location because of COVID.
Yeah,
fair enough. They just had to make do with what they had, which is fine. I have no problems with that. I'm looking for something else to talk about.
I don't have anything else to talk about.
Is there any other part of the story that you found particularly compelling? Or at least was there any part of the Catherine and Peter stuff, since it did take up so much time? What about, like, okay, let's talk about Elizabeth again, since we were compelled by her. What about when she found out that Peter's mum had been the one that killed her kid and she stole Paul and went back to her and, like, they had to... Unfortunately, I felt that ended up just being about getting Peter and Catherine on the road so they could finally have their fucking romance, I guess.
Well, it's another example of, I really like the idea of it. Like, and looking back once again to season one, being like, well, back in the day, I remember if Elizabeth, I felt like she'd had a mental crack and was alone with Paul, she might actually do something. At no point did I think they were going to make Elizabeth do something so crazy that would make me not like her anymore. So I wasn't fearful for Paul's safety. I felt bad for her character. And I think, like, it's nice to have Elizabeth and Peter bond and grow closer. But, yeah, it's one of those things where, like, it's just something that happens and then it's forgotten. We move on. So I like it in theory. It was fine in execution, but I'm not going to think on that moment probably ever again.
Are there any moments, scenes, storylines, episodic ones, smaller ones, bigger ones that did stand out? I kind of like the idea of the crocodile roaming the palace. I like that Archie let it out. I like the bit where they're talking about it being an omen, and then when it opens its eyes, all of the nobles just start stabbing it.
That,
like,
was
that's
a
the
solid
omen.
Joke. That was
great.
A really great joke. I will absolutely stand by that. Well, like I said, I really enjoyed Mariel's kind of coming to terms with what it means to be a serf. I thought it was really upsetting, and I did feel the danger when the serfs kind of took over and were like, fuck you guys. I was like, oh, okay, fuck. What's going to happen now? I'm like, I don't think there was, like, a giant revolution maybe there was in Russian history. I don't remember. Maybe Catherine comes out fine, but, like, how long does this go for? What are the larger ramifications of this thing that's about to happen? Ultimately, we find out she squashes it and that's it. But there were moments in that episode I was like, oh, which is cool. I'm trying to think.
So even this question though, because I think there are lots of like little moments and little lines and stuff like that, but they make for side notes. I'm genuinely surprised there isn't more meat here to talk about. The biggest question faced this season is not whether Catherine can lead. That is our question. It's can Peter change?
Yeah.
And does he really love Catherine? And does Catherine actually love Peter? I guess by the end of the season, we've got an answer, but I don't know whether that was 10 hours of television.
And I don't think that was the most exciting story to tell in terms of like what could be happening here.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
I feel like we've tried really hard to have something media to talk about. I just...
We've done our best, I think.
Maybe we failed. This is the fail episode. We failed you, listeners. I'm sorry.
What a way to end the year. Sorry, guys.
Such a high note. We should have ended last week with Succession. Do you have any side notes, Damask?
I don't, no.
Yeah, I got quite a few side notes, but again, this is surprises me that this is what I came away with. It wasn't like, oh, isn't this interesting and this blah, blah, blah. It's just like, I really enjoyed the joke about how people invent things and then their surnames end up being the names of those things. You know, Molotov Man, when he has made the Molotovs, Molotov cocktails. Or her name is Katya Velcro and she invented Velcro. I did enjoy that, I gotta say. Will you really be consecrated with the blood of the patriarch on your hands? I'll wash, says Catherine. Very dry. Love it. The Bible has damaged many heads in a myriad of ways, says Catherine. Catherine punching herself, and then Marion says to her, what are you doing? Reminding myself not to cry. Pin a note to your dress. Fuck. I often think best during cunnilingus, hence the word cunning in the term. Or something along those lines was the line. Yeah. It's great. I really enjoyed the Orlo and the teacher, Katya Velcro, when they're having that little, like, just talk at a cocktail party or something like that, and they're talking about Kant and then Descartes and then decant, like that little, like, wordplay.
I do remember
which
that, yeah.
Orlo loved, and I was like, I understand. I get it.
His eyes lit up, yeah.
I was like, yeah, I get that. That was delicious. I enjoyed that as well. When they want to kill you, that's a red flag, says Tatiana. Yes. And then we already see the Elizabeth line. Little details are like, oh, Jason Isaacs, for one scene, he plays Peter's father, Peter the Great.
Oh, yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Which was great casting. You'll love any time you see a Jason Isaacs on a television show this or movie. True. Very hookish. I just kept thinking of his portrayal.
I had that thought as well. That's the thing. I didn't think Peter the Great would be like such a fancy man. I don't know. Like, I imagine he was quite barbaric, but yeah, no, it was nice to see him.
Absolutely. The song that ends the show that we cut to credits was with, I don't even know who it's from. I should look this up, but I'm Sticking With You. I'm sticking with you. The last time I heard that song was in Juno, which is a trillion years ago.
Taking me back. Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, my other musing is Jape is a word we should use more often.
I agree.
Alongside huzzah, you know, should just be a more common
expression. I said huzzah today, actually, as I was putting up Christmas lights.
You should bring it back. Let's bring back huzzah and Jape. Least favorite and favorite episodes. What was your least favorite episode, Damask?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I know you liked the alligator or crocodile thing. I didn't really like it very much.
That's fine. It wasn't my favorite episode.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard because I think there's lots of moments in this show that I'm like, oh, I like that. And lots of moments where I'm like, I'm just not connecting with this or I really don't like it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I mean, I don't necessarily have an episode where I'm like, fuck this. It's weird. I'm tossing up between the alligator or crocodile one and the one where Catherine's mum comes.
When Joanna arrives.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that Joanna trying to seduce Peter, the lack of decision making. Although I did really love the new Catherine dynamic. Yes, yeah, I'm gonna go with the crocodile one. Crocodile one.
I think as frustrating as some of the plot, the way that plot resolves, I really enjoyed, I was actually impressed that they found another way of, like, Catherine, I think it's a great performance from Elle Fanning, but it's very consistent, Catherine, I think. And to see her feel a little more vulnerable, or just her charm does not work on Joanna whatsoever, and you can sense Catherine second-guessing herself in a way she hasn't ever, as far as I can remember.
I also love the conversation between, I think it's Joanna and Elizabeth, or it's with Joanna and one of her advisors, and being like, as long as you are telling my daughter that she should take over, that she should rule, you are putting her in danger and I will fucking destroy you. And I was like, that's really valid, actually. That's quite fair.
So the crocodile episode, fair enough. My least favorite was episode 9, Walnut Season. A lot of stuff I was struggling with came to a head. The Orlo stuff about when they found out that he'd been, you know, funneling money to his thing. I could not believe how underwhelming that revelation was. That how that played out, how that was executed.
Mm-hmm.
And not only then, I think the build up to it was not well executed anyway. And so when it got to that, it just felt so cheap or so unearned to get to the point. Nothing about that scene worked for me. The Elizabeth stuff, Elizabeth stealing Paul, worked for me in theory, but I don't know, for some reason it didn't quite rub in the moment. I think also, you know how the Swedish royalty showed up out of nowhere?
Yeah.
That felt really weird. That they just sort of just start commenting on what's happening, but they're not really pushing any sort of...
No, it seems like a setup for next season 3.
Yeah. I just thought it was really messy, and maybe it was the best example of what this season was doing poorly, if that made sense. So I'm going to go with episode 9, Walnut Season. What was your favorite episode, Damask?
I think I'm going to go with a single Jape, I think, because that's the one episode where we get some good stuff from Mariel. I was devastated when Shaky got her fucking throat cut. I love Mariel coming back and like shooting that woman in the back of the head. That was fucking awesome.
That was cool.
Yeah. I also liked, this is a real moment, or should have been a turning moment for Catherine, not listening to Orlo. And things getting out of control, and then her having to, turn to violence, which is not something she wants to do. It should have been a huge learning curve. I'm not sure it was, but it felt like this was going to really start some stuff at the tail end of the season. So at that point, I was really excited.
Just before I give you my favorite episode, something you just reminded me of for some reason amongst all that was something else you said in our episode 1 review, which was how much you kind of actually started to feel for our little group of would-be throne takeovers, the coup that would be, as friends.
Yes.
Like, you just enjoyed spending time with them in their little secret meetings trying to make this stuff happen. And, like, yes, I understand the dynamics are different now because they're leading the country, but it's weird how much that just does not exist in this season at all, I didn't feel like.
Yeah.
And maybe the show didn't realize, or the creators didn't realize, just how much people did attach themselves or did care about that little... Group of revolutionaries.
I think that friend, that group, that circle of friends was really important because the world outside with, the other aristocrats and just politically was so scary and horrifying and brutal. And then, so then we would have these moments of friendship. They were like, oh, you'd breathe a sigh of relief. But now that, that Peter is her connection and we want to develop that, I guess there's not a lot of room for her to have a support base, because then, like, why would she ever go towards Peter?
Good point. My favorite episode was episode 3, Alone at Last, which is the episode where Catherine is sort of having these wild, like, mood swings and is isolating herself from her her allies. And Peter has been forced to stay imprisoned by himself in his room, and then eventually with the body of his dead mother.
Oh my God, it's fucked.
And, like, just leave Nicholas Holt in a room with a character and let magic happen is the lesson I took from that episode. Yeah. Like, it was fantastic. And I thought the work they did with, like, it was excellent character work on those two. And like, I was like, oh, I'm really here for this. And then I kind of, then it feels like they got so into that that was the rest of the season. I was like, we can move on, guys. We can don't have to. I just have to always be about just those two all the time. That's my other stuff. But I was really, really into the show at that point, and it felt like a real turning point for the, like, okay, this is what season two. Let's move with momentum forward into the season. It never quite got there from there. But that was, I loved episode three, Alone at Last. Predictions, hopes, or concerns for a season three, if we're getting one. No guarantees there. I do wonder how expensive this show is to make. It feels like it's mostly done in one location. So maybe it's actually kind of cheap to make. I don't know.
I'm hoping that the stagnation or possible missteps in this season aren't actually missteps and are actually leading us somewhere cool in season three. That's my hope. I am concerned that the magic is dwindling a little bit.
Yeah.
That they don't necessarily know where they want the story to go or why perhaps the audience loved the show so much. It's, you know, it's beyond the quips or the sex or the violence. Mm-hmm. There was something more there to hold on to. So yeah, that's my concern. But yeah, it's about all I've got, I think.
Just an example I thought of as well. Something I often appreciate about the show is, like, Peter is such a poet when it comes to describing, like, food or sex or anything like that.
Mm.
But when it happens 20 times an episode, every episode, it just starts to lose its appeal eventually. It's a great character trait. It's beautifully written. Nicholas Holt will perform it with aplomb every single time. But eventually it just, you gotta find something else. I'm looking, I hope they get to season three. I really do. I will watch a season three with enthusiasm. I hope that's it though, because sometimes when a show does this, it feels lost. The best thing that can happen is no ending is coming, because then you have a goal. Then you have something you need to get to and achieve. And I reckon if this knew it had one season left and it had to find a satisfying ending, it would probably find a really compelling way of doing it. It would probably end up with Catherine murdering everybody inside the Winter Palace except herself. But you know what?
Sounds good.
Would be an ending. That would be quite a good ending, I think. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at ShawneeBoyDraws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can find me on Twitter at Maskymo, MaskyMoo.
Next episode, whenever that will be, a week, 2 weeks, sometime in the not too distant future, we'll be back with an end of year off topic, hot topic episode. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye. Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks. You're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.